We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. Mark Reardon.
The heart of America is not government. The center of America is not Washington, D.C. The center of America is the neighborhoods where 330 million Americans are raising their kids and trying to put food on the table and trying to love their neighbors.
Mark Reardon.
There's nothing worse than a reckless jackass who thinks he's smarter than everybody else.
I am the smartest man alive!
The Mark Reardon Show is on now.
Hey, welcome to the Mark Reardon Show. Brad Young sitting in this afternoon for the vacationing Mark Reardon. I don't remember if he's climbing a mountain or he's deep sea diving. I don't remember which, or maybe he's planning on going into space with Jeff Bezos. I don't really know. Mark didn't tell me, but he'll give you all the details, as he always does, when he comes back. Before we dive into the stuff that we do here on the Mark Reardon Show, I'm going to throw it to Sue Thomas, because we got some traffic brewing out there.
Yeah, we've got 6440 completely closed right now at Clarkson, and it's because of an accident, obviously. Eastbound drivers are slowing for a look, but if you are leaving town on this Friday afternoon, we've got a parking lot jam that goes back through 141. If you can, go ahead and take 70. 70 is fine. It's just a little bit slow from Highway A out through Wentzville. But again, westbound 6440 closed at Clarkson. And we have a pretty serious accident southbound 55 north of Loughboro, blocking the right lane and a jam there as well. So I just wanted to mention at least that big closure, Brett.
Well, I'm really glad you did, because that's exactly the way I go home. So appreciate that. Yes, it is the Mark Reardon Show, and every Friday at this time, you're accustomed to the Reardon Roundtable. But as I like to say when I fill in for Mark, when he's not here, it's the Reardon-less Roundtable. And joining us today, Amy Gunn, Democrat consultant and a personal injury attorney with the Simon Law Firm. Amy, great to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
And also Greg Keller, you've heard Greg many times, Republican strategist, consultant with Atlas Strategy Group, and a man whose hair has its own Twitter page.
That's correct. Thanks for having me today.
Us, that's true. You have to talk about yourself in the plural, like kind of like Bob Dole, a little different than
the royal we.
Yeah, exactly. So thanks for joining us today. And I had some stuff planned to start with, but breaking news, there was an announcement. I think the press conference was less than an hour ago, and in St. Louis County and St. Louis City, officials have stated that starting on Monday, both the city and the county will require masks to be worn indoor public places. That includes bars and restaurants, any public place of accommodation that you go to. They're going to require masks for all people, not just those who are unvaccinated, but for the vaccinated alike. And I believe it applies to everyone age 5 and older. And the St. Louis County announcement says it twice, including those who are vaccinated will be required to wear a mask. And they also encourage you, which I'm not exactly sure why, but to wear masks outdoors is going to be strongly encouraged, but not required. So I'm going to open this up to Amy. Good idea, bad idea? I know this is breaking news, but what are your initial thoughts on this?
I don't know if you can subscribe good or bad to it. I think it's necessary. I wish our numbers were better. I don't think it's anything that anybody wants. I guarantee that no one wanted to make that announcement today. It's not really good politically in this atmosphere to require it. But I feel confident that the decision was made based on the numbers in the area, and the will behind it is to make our community safer for everybody.
Well, certainly the numbers are going up. The question becomes, is this the right move to take, Greg?
I mean, what really sticks in my craw about this is that if you look at the counties across Missouri and you kind of rank order them in terms of what counties, what areas of the state have had the highest number of COVID deaths per capita, I don't know how Sam Page and Tashara Jones get off thinking that they are to explain to anyone what the guidelines should be, because their county, their city, ranks among the worst in all of Missouri. This is not backed by science. Certainly the idea that people should be wearing masks is not backed by science. So that's unfortunate. And of course, the thing that's doubly unfortunate is that you're going to see a lot of businesses go out of business as a result of this. You're going to see a lot of Missourians and St. Louisans out of jobs. And we've seen that the economic problems that these kind of mandates cause are the hardest on our middle-income and lower-income workers. Happily, the Republican-led legislature passed a bill this last session that said that these kind of bans can only be put in effect for 30 days or more. So I think St. Louisans find themselves in the age-old trap that they've found themselves in politically for about 50 years now, which is that the Democrats got them into a huge problem and the Republicans are going to get them out of it.
I can't let that go, man.
Okay, jump in here, Amy. That's what this is. This is the roundtable. Jump on in.
Wearing masks is going to put people out of business.
Absolutely.
And a small ask of asking someone to put a mask on to protect themselves and their neighbors.
It doesn't protect them.
It's going to. Okay, well, I cannot have a conversation with somebody who does not acknowledge science.
Okay,
I can't do it.
Well, okay, so Amy, look at the graphs, state by state, any state that you want to. Look at when mask mandates were put in place, and look at what happened to the case numbers. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that masks don't stop the spread.
You've got two data points that you're trying to correlate. And you're saying that if I wear a mask, whether I'm, let's say I'm not vaccinated, which I am, mm-hmm. and I go into an area without a mask, and someone else without vaccinated goes into an area with a mask, there's an equal chance that person will get the Delta variant of COVID.
No, what I'm saying is that if you look at when mask mandates are put in place, this is across any state, this is across any country in the world, once mask mandates are put in place, they do not stop the spread of COVID. They simply don't.
Show me that.
Oh, I can name you like 17 Twitter accounts right now.
That makes no sense whatsoever.
I totally agree.
Again.
These mask mandates don't work, which is why I don't know why we're putting them in place.
It's hard to have a conversation with somebody where you can't even agree on basic science.
But here's one of the things that we can agree on, and that is I don't know of any science that backs up the idea that someone who is already fully vaccinated wearing a mask gives them any additional protection or protects anyone else. Can we agree that there is no science demonstrating any beneficial effect of wearing a mask if you're fully vaccinated?
I think the reason behind this is people are not being truthful about whether they're vaccinated or not.
Precisely. So it's about the image. It's about the projection that says we can't tell who is vaccinated or not. So everyone has to wear masks, even if you're fully vaccinated. Not that the science requires it, but that the perception of your status requires it.
Those are two different things.
That's my point.
So if everyone who's not vaccinated would wear a mask,
yes,
the numbers would go down. If we could guarantee that people who are not vaccinated are going to public places and they're putting a mask on, we wouldn't need this mandate.
If masks worked, And we know that people have been instituting masks. There have been a number of universities who have done studies on this, and Americans during much of the pandemic, including in Midwestern states like Missouri, as many as 90% plus of Missourians were masking. Studies have been done on this, and yet the numbers continued to go up. So I'm sorry. I know a lot of people want to think that masks stop the spread. It simply doesn't. We have had masks on for the better part of a year and a half, and the numbers have been spiking throughout that, regardless of whether or not people were masking or not, and regardless of whether or not the particular municipality they lived in had mask requirements. So the masks don't work. We do know what the masks do work, which is that they help drive economic devastation. And again, that economic devastation has been visited upon the most vulnerable among us, whether it's kids who can't go to school or people who are waiting tables and their restaurant is shut down.
Well, Greg, here's the question that I have on that point. I completely agree with you that in situations where there were restrictions on how many people could go to restaurants, that was devastating to the restaurant and beverage industry. I represent many of those companies. I represent lots of hotel chains. It virtually it almost destroyed so many businesses during the lockdown. But is the least what I'm seeing here with regard to the announcement that was made just about an hour ago, there's no additional restrictions for occupancy in restaurants. So your position is that simply adding in the masks, even if restaurants aren't going to be limiting occupancy, that in of itself will have a negative economic impact.
Yes. If you tell waiters and waitresses and servers that they are required to harass people going into their restaurant to minutely remember what it says is you have to wear it in the restaurant. You cannot be wearing it when you are taking a bite or taking a sip. So if you're going to live by the letter of this proclamation, then while you are sitting there at a restaurant, you're supposed to be wearing your mask roughly 95% of the time. And yes, of course, I think it's only common sense that that is going to prevent people from going and eating in restaurants.
Well, I made the comment before the show started that I'm going to buy one of those construction helmets with two cans of beverages on each side, and I can just walk around with a straw in my mouth all the time, and then I don't have to worry about the mask. But Amy, obviously you don't see it that way. I mean, not about my stupid joke,
Here's
but about Greg's
things.
Position.
A couple things. It's a small ask. I mean, to look at this situation and to go down a rabbit hole that they don't work and that businesses are going to close and the earth is going to fall and we're all going to die. I mean, it is the most base fear-mongering that there is. It's a small ask to wear a mask. And if you don't want to wear a mask, then you don't have to go. I've been to restaurants since we reopened. I have seen no one complain. People wear a mask in the door. They sit down. They take their mask off. People are going about
their
business.
That's breaking the rules. That's absolutely out. That is flouting this proclamation that was just put out. It said you have to wear it in all public places. You are strongly encouraged, including private places of business. And the only time you can have it off is when you are actively eating or drinking, which means when you are taking a sip or a bite. Which means if you are sitting there and trying to have a conversation with your wife or your husband on your Saturday night date, you have to be wearing a mask the entire time except when actively eating or drinking. And I'm sorry, I don't think it's fear-mongering. I think it's fact. Explain to the people who have lost all these jobs. Explain to the people when the Missouri unemployment rate was in double digits as a result of this. You may think it's a small ask to someone to have to wear a mask 95% of the time. I don't think it's a small ask when you're talking about people's livelihoods being endangered.
Well, we're talking about people's lives, not just their livelihood, and nothing's being shut down. Nothing's being shut down. There's
businesses
no closure.
Businesses are not
reduction.
Being closed. Businesses are not being closed. Yelp estimates that 60% of non-chain restaurants have gone under or will go under as a result of these mandates. 60%.
That was last
year. Zero.
Yeah, that was last year. We're talking about the mandate today. Today.
You're not even talking about living by the mandate. What you're talking
about the letter, the difference
the
between
letter
the letter
of the law
and
says
the spirit.
That you have to wear it while you're in there unless you're actively eating or drinking.
One
so you can't get up on your high horse about this proclamation when you yourself
Greg?
Are going to flout it.
What should we do?
We should do what they've done in rural areas where fewer people have died than St. Louis. We should do what the Swedes have done, who have now the lowest death rate in all of Europe because of this.
Well, it is clearly a mess. And I'll tell you what's another mess is Kim Gardner. She's a hot mess. And when we come back from this break, guys, we're going to talk about Kimberly Gardner's office. It's getting national attention. It's shining a bright light on St. Louis that shows the country, look how great we are here in the Midwest. This is what we have as a circuit attorney. We're going to be back right after this on the Mark Reardon Show. More with Amy Gunn and Greg Keller. Brad Young sitting in this afternoon. Don't go away. Tell you folks, you think the fun ends when we go to a commercial? No, it doesn't. We carry the conversation through. It's a lot of fun here on the Reardon Roundtable. Thanks for joining us again on a Friday afternoon. Brad Young sitting in today for Mark. Amy Gunn is with us along with Greg Keller, and we've talked about the mask mandates, but I want to move on. We could talk about that for 2 hours, but I want to move on to Kim Gardner because this has truly been getting national attention. And that is primarily that an individual, I believe his name was Brandon Campbell, was released because no one from the prosecuting attorney's office, no one from the circuit attorney's office bothered to show up after three separate court settings. And the judge, unfortunately, but I think he made the right decision because the rights of the accused also matter. He was released, and now charges have been refiled. But guess what? Mr. Campbell is on the run, and so he is out. He's out. Nobody knows where he is. Obviously, police are looking for him, but I doubt that he's in the area. In any event, I want to start with Amy. Amy, what do you think of this situation with Kimberly Gardner? I mean, obviously, she was voted into office with an overwhelming percentage of the vote just as recently as last year. Even the Post-Dispatch endorsed her opponent, Mary Pat Carl, in the primary. What's your take on this, and should Kim Gardner continue to be the circuit attorney in the city of St. Louis?
I don't think that's a question that for me to answer. Whether she should or should not. I can comment on what I think is a travesty, which is that office is in disarray and has been for a number of years. And I'm on the outside looking in. I'm a practicing lawyer in the civil realm, not the criminal realm. But I do have folks that I've known over the years that were in that office previously and throughout part of the term. And it's been very disruptive, and it's just showing that there are problems in the city of St. Louis that are not being solved, and it's a missed opportunity. And I wish it weren't the case. I don't know what the remedy is at this point, frankly. I would hope that there's been time to see some change, and it really, it just hasn't happened. And I think it's a really sad state.
Greg?
It's a disgrace, and it's a natural embarrassment. Breaking news, Democrats can't govern. This is what happens in every American city that the Democrats run with absolute hegemony. Amy and I were talking about this a little bit during the break. I think, sadly, this is what happens when you have a major national political party, that being the Democrats, who have told an entire community for going on 50 years now that anyone who's a Republican is de facto a racist. Well, that community eventually, starts thinking that every white person is a racist. The tragedy of this is if you look at, I believe it's 350 days. 350 days is the average amount of time in St. Louis City that someone has to wait in jail for a hearing date.
Yeah.
Because they are so understaffed, and Kim Gardner has run so many people out of that office. So I wonder, the people who voted for Kim Gardner, I mean, presumably you voted for her in part to get justice, and so the justice system would work on behalf of those people, and those people are now spending a year in jail just to get a trial date. It's a travesty.
So one of the things that yesterday I talked to Patrick Hamaker, he was a former prosecuting attorney in that office. And Amy, you might know him, but he was in that office. And I interviewed him yesterday right here on the Mark Reardon Show. And he told us something that I thought was this fascinating. A couple of things. Number one is that office, when he was there, had between 60 and 75 assistant circuit attorneys in the office. Now they're running about 30. And so you've got half of the staff of attorneys that it takes. In addition to that, because of the turnover that they've had, the people who've had experience that have left have been replaced with people without experience. So not only are you understaffed from a numeric standpoint, but you're understaffed from an experience standpoint. Is this impacting not just the safety issue, not just the criminal issue, but even the rights, as Greg points out, the rights of the accused who are in jail, who have to stay in jail for a longer period of time because there's just a lack of people who want to work for Kimberly Gardner, that the rights of the accused are even being impacted?
It is. I think we can't forget that COVID has shut the courts down for the last year and a half. I know criminal cases are now getting tried again in the city, but that's only been the case for the last couple of months. I don't know how that plays into how long people have been in jail and whether that number has grown because of COVID. But certainly it is the framework of our system to allow trial by jury and speedy trial for those accused of crimes. And it should happen. I can't pretend to understand everything that's going on in that office. Unlike my friend Greg, I'm not going to say that it's due to any overwhelming Democratic majority or whatever. I think it is.
I think hegemony was the word.
Hegemony. It's a hard word for me to even say. I'm not sure I know what it means.
It's a good one.
I do think that there needs to be some spotlight, and there has been quite a bit of spotlight on that office. Something needs to happen. You could also talk about how little prosecutors get paid, and how it's just not something when you get out of law school with a whole lot of debt. A lot of people love the idea of trying cases. The best place to get trial experience is the public defender's office, the prosecutor's office. You get paid nothing, essentially. So there has to be something more to want to get right out of law school and go try those cases. You have to believe in it. And if you're not getting paid anything and you've got loans and you're working in an office that's really difficult to stay motivated, you're not going to stay. And after you get about a year experience trying cases, you're going to be marketable at any good firm. Because trial skills are at a premium.
Well, one of the things, Greg, before I throw it to you, the story that broke yesterday, and this hasn't gotten as much of attention as the story regarding Brandon Campbell, who was released. But just yesterday, there was a situation that arose with Dr. Shirley Washington Cobb. Her son, Dwight Washington, was killed back in February of 2020. And the suspect was to be, there was a court appearance on this just this week, and a prosecuting attorney who had never seen the file, had never met with the family, walked into court, thumbed through a few pages, agreed to a sentencing which will allow him to go out, I believe, in 8 years for murder, and never informed the family. So this is not just a one-time experience or a one-time situation, Greg. We've got a pattern of misconduct, and shall I say, prosecutorial misconduct, perhaps even malpractice, if you can use that phrase. And this is systemic to this particular office.
Yeah. And, you know, to your point, this was not a situation where, you know, someone took a shot from a block away and you know, ended up killing a person. This young man was beaten to death. And in that particular instance, tragically, this person is going to get away with a mere 8 years in jail. I think one thing that Amy and I do agree on is that these prosecutors, don't worry, it won't happen again.
Don't get excited, folks.
One of the things we agree on is I believe that we have spent not nearly enough money on prosecutors' offices. I think those people don't make enough money. And just as much that, I think when I talk to prosecutors and friends of mine who have had those jobs before, the caseload that they work
enormous.
Under is crushing. I'm totally willing to concede your point that was very possibly malpractice, what that lawyer did in that instance. I will also tell you that in my experience, those young prosecutors, and a lot of them are there for all the right reasons. They want to make their communities safer. Mm-hmm. They are working at 2, 3, 4 times more cases than any lawyer at any private firm would ever be expected to carry.
I'm often on the record of saying I'm always in favor of attorneys getting paid more. I mean, I'm just across the board. I'm always in favor.
All agree
and in
on
fact,
something.
My wife is actually the largest advocate of attorneys getting paid more. So I will always take that position. But here's what I want to throw back to you, Amy, is this. I want you to consider the following hypothetical. And that is that in a situation with regard to William Tisby, we've heard in February or March, that there was a 73-page indictment that was handed down by the Ethics Committee for the Missouri Bar Association. I've read all 73 pages. It is overwhelming in its length and breadth in terms of categorizing not just one, not just 10, but dozens and dozens of intentional misstatements. I will call them lies, but intentional misstatements to the court that were failed to be corrected, which you and I both know is an ethical breach under Missouri Rules of Professional Conduct. And that right now is before the Missouri Supreme Court. Now, here's my hypothetical, because what I just said is not hypothetical, it's actual, but here's the hypothetical. Assume for discussion purposes that that the Missouri Supreme Court suspends Kim Gardner's law license, which I personally think is a foregone conclusion, but at least I'm hoping. But in any event, assume that that happens. Under Missouri law, again, it's not a controversy. It's not an issue. Missouri law specifies that if you're not a licensed attorney, you can't be a circuit attorney. You can't be a prosecuting attorney. And the governor is empowered to appoint a replacement. What would you see as the fallout if Kimberly Gardner is removed from office because of a breach of ethics and the governor, who is you know, the governor and Kimberly Gardner might agree on what day it is, but beyond that, they wouldn't. Now the governor is going to be putting in a prosecuting attorney, a circuit attorney in the city of St. Louis, in a community that she carried by 77% of the vote in the last election. What would be the political fallout for a Republican governor putting a new circuit attorney in downtown St. Louis?
I think he does so and will do so carefully, if that's the situation. I was really proud of our governor in his last Supreme Court appointment with Judge Robin Ranson from the Eastern District Court of Appeals, appointing her to the Supreme Court. I think Governor Parson can be very measured, and I do think he's capable, very capable of understanding the political fallout for making a decision or putting someone in that position that does not match the community. So I would tell you, I would be very, if that happens, I would be optimistic that he would make the right choice and confer with the some folks who actually know what's going on and are boots on the ground, so to speak, in the city, and would make the right choice. I guess I have to believe that, Brad, because otherwise it would just be, why would he step in the hornet's nest on that? I just don't see the why would he do that?
Well, I'll throw my two cents in here, but I want to get Greg's opinion on this first.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were going to go first. I think the good news for if the governor does replace her, and I pray to God that he does, I think the good news is that there's a lot to be said for following a weak act. And I think that whoever steps into this role really just needs to do the bare minimum of actually deciding we're going to prosecute violent criminals in this city for a change, which is what Kim Gardner has not done. The number of people being convicted of felonies under her office has plummeted compared to her predecessors. I think you talk about political fallout from this. Well, here's another piece of political fallout that's going to happen. She's going to get disbarred. Kim Gardner's going to get disbarred. She's going to get thrown out of office. And you know who's going to be the happiest person in all of Missouri politics as a result? Eric Greitens, who is running for the United States Senate, who is going to go out there and say he has now somehow been exonerated. That will not be true. Like everything else that comes out of Eric Greitens' mouth, it will be a lie. But he is going to try to ride this disbarment into the United States Senate. I hope it doesn't happen.
I have a hard time saying that, my friend. But you know what?
You know what's interesting is there'll be two people running for the Senate out of the same incident, because Mark McCloskey's riding the same pony. And when I interviewed Mark McCloskey 2 weeks ago, my first question to him was, "So, Mark McCloskey, what do you think of the Second Amendment?" And he at least thought it was funny, but unlike anyone in this room. But but see, I see there being more political fallout.
What do you see?
Because with Kim Gardner, she has become a cult of personality. I see her as being a cult of personality in the city of St. Louis, where she doesn't prosecute criminals, she doesn't her felony prosecution rate plummets, and her popularity rises. Why is that? It's not based upon performance. It's based upon her position that I'm here to fight, not just for racial equality, but I'm here to fight for racial supremacy. And she goes against, she's filed lawsuits against all kinds of people alleging this mass conspiracy, grand conspiracy of racism, none of which was true. And I believe that her people see her as a champion for who they are, not a champion for prosecution. And so if she gets forcibly removed by a white Republican sitting in southern Missouri, I see there being a lot of political fallout, because that is going to be viewed as, here's our champion, and she's being taken down by the man. And I do see a political fallout from that. I hope it doesn't happen. And I hope, like you, that Governor Parson can find that person who can fit into that position, because this affects us. I mean, I live in the county, but this affects our region.
Yes.
When St. Louis is held up as the most dangerous city in America, that impacts the ability of corporations to come here. That impacts the ability of Centene to stay here. I mean, they have 10,000 employees in the state of Missouri, and they're looking to move to the Carolinas as fast as humanly possible. And so this does impact us, and I pray for the best outcome for the city of St. Louis. Hey, it is the Reardonless Roundtable this afternoon. More to come. And if you think this is fun, wait till we talk about Pelosi and McCarthy. I mean, folks, buckle up. Phone the kids, wake the neighbors. It's the Reardonless Roundtable on 97.1 FM Talk. Back on the Reardonless Roundtable this afternoon, and with Amy Gunn, a Democrat consultant and a personal injury attorney with the Simon Law Firm, Greg Keller, Republican strategist and consultant with Atlas Strategy Group. And we're breaking down the issues of the day. We're going to get to the Pelosi stuff in a minute. I'm just going to try to keep you hanging on as long as possible to fund those confiscatorily high commercials we run here. But in the meantime, I do want to start with this issue, this segment, because just this week, the Missouri Supreme Court rendered a decision on the Medicaid expansion. And essentially, what the Supreme Court did was, again, the Missouri Supreme Court, was to hold that the ballot initiative that was passed by a majority of Missourians who in the last election is not unconstitutional simply because it lacked a funding mechanism. Now, Amy, you've got the decision here. I looked at probably half of it yesterday before the show, right as the decision was being rendered, which, by the way, I want to add this in. This is like the fastest Missouri Supreme Court decision in the history of the state. I mean, sometimes I've waited years to get a decision, and they render it in like 15 minutes. So it's amazing how fast that thing came out. But what else did you see in that particular opinion?
That was my takeaway, that the court was asked to determine whether the initiative petition, commonly known as Medicaid expansion, was constitutional. And the main issue was whether it required an appropriation by the legislature. Because if it required an appropriation, then there's another part of the Constitution with which it conflicted. The court held that, as written, the initiative petition did not require a, quote, appropriation. It was still within the legislature's discretion to fund it or not. But as written, the initiative petition saying that it expands Medicaid to include more people than it already did is constitutional. So now, as I understand it, we are the legislature will be left with the decision. Do they fund it or not? And if the legislature does not fund it, then it just runs out of money.
Greg, this has been a big issue, but is it really that big of an issue for Republicans? It's gotten a lot of coverage.
Yeah.
Do you see this as a big issue for statewide Republicans?
It's a pretty significant issue for I think, a couple reasons. First of all, is that what we're talking about here, unfortunately, is paying more people not to work. So people, by virtue of not having a job, not seeking a job, not getting a job, would actually be getting more money from the government. So that's something that bothers Republicans and conservatives generally. The other problem is that, and I'll let you guys, the lawyers, speak as to whether or not this program could, and these increases could continue on into perpetuity. I'm not sure that I do know that. I do know that in an instance where these increases do take place, do stay in place for time, I've seen estimates that Missouri state government is going to lose, this is going to be a deficit of between $300 and $400 million a year to Missouri state coffers. What's happened is the federal government, through stimulus funds and other buckets of money, is sending 1 and 2 time cash infusions to the state of Missouri. I think we're set to get about $1.1 billion, and we're talking about taking that money and giving it to people not to work. The problem is that if that's anything more than just a 1 or 2 time infusion and that program continues on, then you're going to start knocking the bottom out of the Missouri economy and running some serious deficits. So I think that's a concern. First is paying people not to work, and secondly is the fiscal impact it could have long term on our state.
Amy?
I just need to respond to the paying people not to work myth, because this section, Medicaid, prior to the expansion, covered blind, disabled, pregnant women, children under 19, and those who were 65 or older. Expansion merely includes adults aged 19 to 64 whose income is at or below 138% of the federal poverty level, which is about $35,000 for a family of four. So I don't know. I think we should be real clear about who we're talking about and the cost of not covering people with Medicaid is outrageous. People get sick, whether they're working or not. People get sick, whether they have jobs or not, or however old they are. They get sick and they need care. So to have some coverage, and my understanding was that healthcare organizations and lobbying groups for the healthcare industry want this to happen because they get paid for Medicaid recipients when they come into the ER with problems. Also, the matching funds from federal government, as I understand it, 90% is going to be paid by the feds. The cost to Missouri to add 275,000 folks in that category, very low income, who need health care, is 10%. And as you point out, we've got money.
Yeah. So a couple things. First of all, the Democrats, they've made it pretty clear that they want to pay people first at 100% of the poverty level not to work. And then now you guys have ratcheting it up to 140% of the poverty level.
138.
You guys want to pay 138% people at 138% of the federal poverty level. You want to pay them so that they can stay at home and not work. I think it's also kind of hilarious / whistling past the graveyard when people just blithely talk about like, oh yeah, this federal money is going to come in perpetuity. Last I checked, the U.S. federal government was in debt to the tune of, was it 27 trillion? Is it 27 trillion?
It's 28 trillion as
trillion
of right
dollars.
Now. 28 trillion
so
in debt.
That doesn't give me a lot of solace, the idea that, don't worry, Washington, D.C. and the federal government is just going to get us out of the fire on that.
But here's my issue with all of this. And I take a little different tack than either one of you on this. Here's my concern. The way this is being reported is that the Missouri Supreme Court is ordering the legislature to fund this, which is not what the Supreme Court said. It's going to be sent back to the district court for the purpose of the district judge making a ruling and finding. What my concern is, and I hope we don't go down this rabbit hole, and that is where we have, just like we did with the desegregation busing for a generation or generations, where we had judges telling legislatures how to spend their money. And to me, from the perspective of the division of duties between the branches of government, I don't want a circuit court judge, I don't want a district court judge telling the legislature how to spend money. Because that was a debacle with the busing. It went on for decades and decades and decades with no accountability, with no way to rein in that spending. And my fear here is if we establish another situation where a court judge can tell the legislature how to fund something, that to me tramples on our division of government. Amy, do you see it that way or not?
Well, I see the decision that was handed down yesterday by the Missouri Supreme Court not to require the court to do anything about funding.
Very good.
I agree with you that that it is maybe being reported that way, but that's not the decision.
Greg, hey, we're coming up on a hard break. I'm sorry, we're going to have to let you go. Greg Keller, thanks for sitting in today with the Atlas Strategy Group. Amy Gunn, thanks for taking your time to come down here. She's, of course, with the Simon Law Firm. Great law firm. The Reardonless Roundtable. Hey, we'll be back right after this. Don't go away.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.